You're listening to Robert Wright's Non-Zero Podcast.
Hello, Paul.
Hello, Bob. How are you?
I'm doing fine. You know, the fact that we've got Paul Bloom and Robert Wright together can mean only one thing, which is another edition of the Small Non-Zero Podcast, the collaboration between your newsletter, Small Potatoes, and my newsletter and podcast and media empire, Non-Zero. And Paul, stop me if you've heard this joke, which you may have. Did you hear that Hunter Biden is changing his name?
I have not.
You haven't heard that? Really?
No, go on.
In that case, it's not a joke. It's true. Is this, have you heard that Hunter Biden is changing his name?
No, I haven't. Sorry. He's
changing it from Hunter to nothing. Do you know why he's changing it to nothing? I mean, nobody. I'm sorry. I screwed up the joke. He's changing it to nobody.
Why is he changing it to nobody,
because,
Bob?
Paul, in America, nobody is above the law.
Oh, very good. It's very trenchant.
I didn't think it up. I'm kind of half proud to say. No, actually, it's not a bad joke. It's not a bad joke.
What makes this valuable is a lesser podcast would just cut this and do it all again.
That would be lesser. Yes, that would be lesser. This is value. This is greater. Value is added by the authenticity and genuine spontaneity of everything.
You getting the joke wrong. Me being a terrible straight man. It just makes it funny.
That's the way we are, folks. This is reality. Although you are in some kind of exotic location that you may or may not want to talk about. I mean,
I'm happy to talk about it. I'm in Mexico City with my wife. Our house is being gut renovated. Our house in Toronto is being gut renovated as we speak, leaving us, we have to go be somewhere. Living in Toronto is very expensive. So we decided, let's go to Mexico City. And it is fantastic. I've never been here before. I've been to Mexico, but never been to Mexico City. Have you been?
You know, there was a study done on the two best ways to alienate podcast listeners. And one is to brag about being in an exotic location. And the other is to say the reason that you're there is because we're, quote, gut renovating our house because we decided that the color in the kitchen was a little off. So we're just going to do the whole thing over.
No, but it's the servants' quarters. We're kind of cluttered. So we're working on that.
Well, see, that's the kind of guy you are. A lot of people would gut renovate to make the servants' quarters smaller.
No.
You're putting in a sauna for your servants. Is that right?
I'm a man of the people. I'm just. Anyway, Mexico City is fantastic. I'm in the Roma Norte area, which is this lovely blend of the Mexican with fantastic Mexican food and everything, and kind of European. The streets look European. Beautiful parks, great museums. People are nice. Tacos are delicious. There's some excellent bao down the street. So, international.
How long are you going to be in Mexico? Maybe we haven't alienated everyone. How long are you going to be there?
I'm here for another week in Mexico City and then a week in Puerto Vallarta.
It's not getting better, Paul. Stop.
And then, and then back to Toronto.
Oh, plus, you are commending in your newsletter, Small Potatoes. This is what we're going to talk about, I think.
Yes.
You are commending Joe Biden for pardoning his son. Have I got that right? Would you put it differently?
I'm happy to defend Joe Biden. I was reading in the New York Times today, and they got several writers ganging up on Joe Biden in different ways on different political views, saying this is a terrible, immoral, evil decision. And I have mixed feelings about it. But I will defend it. I will say on balance, I think Biden did the right thing. You're going to attack it, I imagine.
I wouldn't put it that way. I'm going to disagree with you.
Yeah, fair enough.
You know, I think the context, of course, for the people attacking him most ferociously is partly that, you know, his campaign was based on the idea that Trump doesn't have respect for the rule of law and other features of a liberal democracy. It's a little ironic, but that's not at the heart of my disagreement with you. Maybe you should tell us briefly why you're on Team Joe here.
Yeah, I'm on Team Joe in a mixed way. So, you know, as president, his role is to be impartial, to favor nobody, to you know, that's his administrative, his moral role. So, you know, pardoning his son plainly violates it. Even if there was good reason to pardon his son, you know, that his son is, it's been disproportionately punished, which I think is true, he still shouldn't. He should be impartial. It's other presidents, including Trump, have not held to that standard. People have pardoned donors, big donors. Trump has pardoned Jared Kushner's, I think, father for for you know, various acts which seem grossly immoral, and now he's going to be ambassador to France, I gather. So in some way, this has been done before.
Just to put a pin in that, specifically, he hired a prostitute. Jared Kushner's father hired a prostitute to lure his brother-in-law, the husband of his sister, into an illicit tryst, which he could then, I guess, videotape or otherwise create evidence of and blackmail him with by sending it to his sister, who didn't know who was sending it to her, right? If I've got this right, like...
Let he who has not done that throw the first stone.
Well, at least he's not ambassador to the Vatican. It's just France, right?
No, it's France. You know, insert your joke about France here. But
yeah, makes perfect sense, actually.
Yeah, and apparently it's because the guy he was blackmailing or tormenting was leading some sort of investigation against him.
I think he was, he was either going to testify against, you know,
testify against him.
So right. Yeah. So Kushner's father committed a crime to begin with, and then whatever. You know, this is not unrelated to what we're talking about, because it has to do with family ties and where loyalty should lie. So I will shut up and let you proceed with your explanation.
So two things. One thing is that the minor thing is I've heard so many people say that Biden lied when he said he wouldn't pardon his son. Another explanation is he changed his mind.
Yeah.
People change their minds. Things happen. Shit happened. Yeah. Biden got, he may see it as such, abandoned by his party. And then Trump got elected. And these are two reasons that might lead Biden to change his mind.
Well, I think there is, if I were his PR people, I would say, you know, implicitly, this was a conditional pledge, right? He was saying, there were people who were saying, wait, if we vote for you, we don't want to vote for you because you'll... pardon your son. And he was saying, no, if I'm reelected, I won't pardon my son. That's kind of the story I'd tell, is that there was an implicit conditionality, but it's bullshit, but it's the story I'd tell.
Yeah. But ultimately it's because I think there's a fair case that by pardoning his son, Biden is being a bad president. He's being a good father. You know,
Paul, he's being a good father.
Good father.
By insulating his son from the negative reinforcement that is due. Do you insulate your children from all negative reinforcement, Paul?
Not all, but
that's just prison.
Hunter Biden is not an 8-year-old who has to stay after school because he was noisy during a recess. He's a guy in his 50s. I don't actually think that him going to prison is going to have the morally restorative effect. I think Biden just doesn't want his son. You know, his other son is dead. He's had a family before, who are all dead. Loves his son dearly. Doesn't want his son to go to prison. I don't want my kids to go to prison. And it's not like Hunter Biden like is going to prison because he murdered somebody like that. These are filling out a form dishonestly and tax problems.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like, I mean, if Hunter Biden murdered somebody, you might say he should go to prison. But nobody thinks he should go to prison. The very idea of him going to prison would, my understanding is, and maybe there's different views, is that this would not be happening if he wasn't the son of the president and the target of Republican attacks. Though Hunter Biden couldn't have done some of his crimes if he wasn't the son of the president either. But anyway, it just comes down to this, which is you have children.
Yes. Imagine
that.
They've actually been in jail, but it was civil disobedience and it was expunged from their record. So
So your children, I know I gather from sort of remarks that have been politically active. Suppose they fall on the wrong side of the Trump administration and they end up heading for prison. Prison. And you had the power to keep them out. Wouldn't you use that power?
Well, that's not really the question. The question is whether if I do, I should be condemned. For starters, you said, well, I don't think prison would have a morally restorative effect on Hunter. Anyway, that's not the only function of criminal punishment. Okay. Mm-hmm. There is, it's true that, you know, rehabilitation is one, although I think it's the one people take least seriously. The other is to keep people off the streets, to keep them from mm-hmm. committing future crimes. In his case, probably not a big deal. Another is to send the message that if you commit crimes, you will go to prison. It's the demonstration effect. And although, you know, not a lot of people are putting themselves in Hunter's shoes and saying, well, you know, I shouldn't worry because maybe my father will be president and pardon me. At the same time, there's a vaguer kind of respect for the whole system of law that is reinforced, but is significant and forceful, is reinforced by the consistent application of the law. So one of the functions of punishing Hunter Biden, one of the social functions, cannot be served now, cannot be fulfilled now, thanks to this.
I agree with that.
But a papa's got to do what a papa's got to do. Not to make your moral philosophy sound crude, Paul, far be it from me to want to do that. But
my moral philosophy is crude in a way that most moral philosophies aren't. So it's always bothered me. Most moral philosophy and moral psychology is that it's entirely principles that are indifferent to family ties. You know, mm-hmm. you're utilitarian, you want to maximize pleasure, diminish pain. You're a Kantian, you have these absolute rules, you have social contracts, you have this, you have that. And real world morality, we're evolved creatures. And the sort of morality mm-hmm. that's suitable for creatures evolved from natural selection, I'm appealing to you here, is one that takes family seriously. There's a law saying that you can't force somebody to testify against their husband or wife. Yeah. And you say, why in the world? What's that crazy ass thing? Well, it honors the fact that there's certain relationships that you don't want the state to get into. The state takes very seriously the power parents have over their children. There's many ways in which this is acknowledged. And I'm just acknowledging it further. I'll say, by the way, the whole idea of the president's pardon power strikes me as ridiculous. Is there any sort of thing which is...
Yeah,
If I didn't know were true, I wouldn't believe it.
Yeah.
We'll make you president, and we'll give you the magical power to absolve anybody of crimes. By the way, just additional perk.
So you're saying that it's very natural for Biden to do what he did in the sense that it's a product of the temptation is a product of nature. And it's a powerful one. But surely you're not saying that if something's natural, it's commendable.
I'm not. But
good, because I've got a counter to that one.
But I would accept it. Yeah. But I do think that not only do we acknowledge that people have partial feelings for those they love and their kin, but we also moralize it and say that's right. Somebody who didn't show any, who didn't care for their child any more than they cared for a stranger, we'd view as kind of monstrous, as a bad parent and a bad person. Someone who didn't have any special feelings towards their friends, it's a bad friend and a bad person. So some of this is not only that, well, this is the way people evolved, this is the way, so we have to, you know, allow for Biden being caught up by this impulse, but recognize an evil impulse. I don't think it's necessarily an evil impulse.
But, you know, I would not condemn someone for, like, having no friends, in effect. In other words, treating everyone the same and having no particular loyalty to anyone. I wouldn't condemn them. What's wrong with that? I mean, it's their business, and who are they hurting?
If you knew somebody who, instead of spending time with their children,
yeah.
They devoted all their energies to helping strangers under the logic that they mm-hmm. could do more good with strangers than with their children and totally neglected their children and said, my children will suffer. But the help I give to strangers outweighs that.
I would not morally condemn them. If you could show me that they've done more moral good on balance, if they keep a million people alive, if somebody's so focused on their research that they neglect their kids, but they save a million lives, I'd say yeah. pat him on the back. I mean, you know, and when we do, there are times when I say, oh, that person's a bad father, that person's a bad mother. But that's when, for me, that's when they are self-indulgent at the expense of their children. They're out smoking crack and their kids are playing with a stove and burning their hands. You know, that is bad because, you know, it's you're not helping anyone else. That's selfish behavior. You're probably not even helping yourself. But no, if you know, and look, to be honest, we know a lot of people who consider their vocational mission so important that, you know, they don't spend as much time with their kids as they'd like to, yeah, and so on. You know, it's not uncommon. And of course, it's not uncommon to convince yourself that you have an important vocational mission when in fact, it's just raw ambition driving you. And we all can fall prey to that. But leaving all that aside, I mean, my larger take, mm-hmm, is I would get at by saying, asking you, one thing you're saying is we should not blame Joe Biden for this, right?
I think Joe Biden is in fact violating part of his duties as a good president. I accept that. I just think that there's another argument.
That he would be violating his duties as a good father if he didn't pardon his son.
That's right.
And that outweighs it.
That's right. Or I don't know where I would fall on this. I'm not even sure that these things are sort of fungible in a way that you could kind of balance it, mm-hmm, out and say the side wins. I just see the argument for what Biden's doing.
The reason I ask about blame is most people naturally, and I think this is natural, is take a retributive view of both criminal punishment and normative punishment. So they say, mm-hmm, in fact, our system of law recognizes, you know, I listed some functions of incarceration, but another one recognized in law is that there is moral value in retribution. In other words, the suffering, mm-hmm, of the person is a good in and of itself. If they were off on a desert island and they weren't setting an example to the rest of society, and nobody knew whether they were suffering, according to this view, which is the official view of our law, it would still be good to make them suffer, because that's a moral good in and of itself. Now, I don't accept that, and that I'll explain how that's relevant. Do you accept it?
No, I think I feel the pull of the retributive desire, but I do think that that's something which we should be rid of.
Yeah, and we know, I think we have a good idea of why the intuition, yeah, evolved that it's good. Yeah. And that's one reason I don't pay attention to it. But, you know, once you drop that, it seems to me that with both, you know, criminal punishment, normative punishment, well, for me, I mean, I'm more or less a utilitarian. And I guess if you're not, well, then I'm, you know, I'd be interested in hearing then how you do think about it once you drop the idea that retribution is good. In other words, we're not talking about whether Biden deserves to suffer normative condemnation. That's, once that's not the question for you, I guess within your framework, maybe it doesn't matter. But for you, go ahead.
Does it weigh on you a bit? The crimes that Hunter Biden is being charged with? Because if it was murder, if it was assault, if it was rape, if it was theft, I would sort of capture a bit of the retributive intuition and say the victims are not getting their what they deserve. But he's lying on a gun form. So there's two things about it, which I'm sort of, mm-hmm, curious whether you think weigh. One is these are victimless crimes. Cheating on one's taxes, well, lying on a form. And
they were in this case because he didn't do cocaine and then go shoot somebody. But the idea here is that the reason we punish people for lying on these forms is that some will, and that is why you need to enforce the rule broadly.
Yes, I'm not saying that the laws are unjust, and tax laws are there for a reason, because you got to have people pay their taxes, and you want people to fill out their gun forms properly. But two things about this. One is, this is a case, there's no case where somebody cries out for justice. The person who Hunter brutalized, the person who, the family of those he killed, it's not that kind of thing. That's one. And two is, he wouldn't be going to prison with these things if it wasn't that there was a political vendetta against him and his family.
actually, how did the prosecution take shape? Is that true?
So I'm writing a lot on Sarah Inger has this very good podcast, Advisory Opinions, and she's Republican, and she sometimes says she's witnessed many, that there are so many crimes being done involving guns. That people go after somebody who has 1,000 guns stored in their basement and is going to, you know, attack the village or something. Somebody who lies on their form, it's just not,
Well, that's a different question from whether the prosecution is politically motivated, I think. It's not a huge thing. But, look, just as an asterisk, Trump supporters could not implausibly conjecture that some of the various criminal prosecutions that were directed toward Trump had some degree of political motivation.
They're not wrong.
That is not dispositive. But let me
phrase these days is lawfare, I guess, where you sick the law against your political vote. They're not wrong.
Right. And it's one example of the rule of law eroding. And that's one reason that another example of that, which is what Biden just did, or another thing that contributes to the perception of the erosion of the rule of law, is really, really not welcome right now. But let me finish. The reason I ask about retribution is, so if punishment is never inherently good because of the suffering it inflicts, what is it for? Well, it is to discourage behaviors that are bad at some social level, right? The individual does something that we say is bad at the social level, and so we punish them either with a criminal penalty or sometimes normatively, you'll never work in this town again, we won't invite you to parties. And that's the question here, is should normative punishment be directed toward Joe Biden? And, first of all, I'd say, in general, a very common thing is to trade off here or a very common dynamic here is that the person is doing what's natural and either is good for them or is something that, is motivated by emotions that were good for the genes in our ancestral environment. They're natural in that sense. And this is a case of that. Wanting to help your son is natural in the sense that it helped genes get into the next generation. So first of all, if moral blame and credit are there to increase the frequency of behaviors that are good for society at large, why are you, Paul Bloom, spending precious moral credit reinforcing something that's natural? You don't have to encourage fathers to help their kids get out of prison. That's natural. Why are you spending moral currency on this?
Yeah. Fair enough. I shouldn't be giving him moral credit, but rather more absolving him a little bit of moral blame.
Well, I would say no. I would say, the two questions, when should you direct blame toward someone? Well, there are two considerations. One is, how likely is it to do any good? Mm-hmm. Right? You said in your, there's some line in your piece about how the upshot is it's ought implies can or something. Yeah. If it's going to be impossible to encourage a certain kind of behavior, people shouldn't go to the bathroom ever, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
But I grant you that it is hard. Look, sure, most fathers would have done this. There's no doubt about that.
I'll also say you, if I compare this to other things like Bill Clinton pardoning a wealthy donor, mm-hmm. got more respect for this. Clinton's simply motivated by greed.
Well, what I would say about it is this is probably a harder thing to discourage. It's so deeply natural. And I concede that. But first of all, again, my idea isn't that what's natural should be commended. I don't commend RFK for having sex with 1,000 women who weren't his wife at the time when he was married. It was natural.
There were only 37 of them.
I doubt that. Have you looked at his diary?
37, you doubt that.
Have you read excerpts from that guy's diary?
No, I have not.
It's like when a day goes by that he doesn't have sex with some woman other than his wife, he writes victory because he's got this Catholic guilt thing going on. He's trying.
That's quite touching.
What?
That's quite touching.
It is touching. That part I commend. But so I was going to say, there's two considerations. Like, how hard is it to discourage the behavior? You know, it's this specific thing, very hard. But the other question is, how important is it to send the signal that it's bad, right?
Yeah.
And I would say, very, very important. You're talking about the whole edifice of the rule of law. And I think these kinds of things erode to some extent respect for the rule of law. And we're at a moment in American history where, like, we don't need any more of this. And the Democrats don't, you know, if they're really serious about condemning the various shenanigans Trump is likely to commit, and you can already see the harbingers of it in his appointments, they should really be pissed that Biden has made it harder for them to make their case. So anyway, I would say, you know, the reason you direct a moral normative punishment toward him is because he's president. Everyone's watching. You know, this message is going out everywhere. So it's of huge consequence. And a related thing I'd say is, isn't it asking a lot of a father to restrain the pardoning impulse here? Sure, but I think we should expect extraordinary things of our public servants. Being president should be a privilege. I mean, Pete Hegseth, you know, the Secretary of Defense nominee. Mm-hmm. Look, if you said to me, look, just an average guy, like I see in the street, oh, did you know that he gets blackout drunk? Well, whatever. Did you know that he had sex with this, there's a sexual assault claim, and he said, she said, and you can go down the list. Now, maybe when you got to this thing that Hegseth apparently did, which is get drunk and yell, kill all Muslims, I'd be like, man, I really don't want this guy at my cocktail party.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
And of course, if you're going to be Secretary of Defense, I'd call that really, really not good. But the point is, if you're going to be Secretary of Defense, yes, having gotten blackout drunk, all this shit is that we expect exemplary conduct of our public service. We may not often get it, but we should be entitled to expect that if we're going to grant great power to people, they're held to a high standard, in part because they have such normative influence, right? Like, they're role models. I mean, Trump has done so much damage to just like the fabric of America by normalizing, and you see it online. You know, it's like the fact that he's this asshole bully has helped normalize this kind of behavior on social media. And now Elon Musk, as if we didn't, you know, as if one high profile bad role model weren't enough. So anyway, that's my argument.
Yeah, I get that. Look, there's a practical bad consequence of this, which is the Democrats lose a bit of a moral high ground when Trump does all of his bullshit he's going to do. And, you know, pardon everybody, pardon insurrectionists, pardon his family members, and so on. I agree. They lost a bit of high ground. It's cost. I agree that Trump, that Biden is in some way being a bad president. And I appreciate the sort of argument that we should be yelling at him and discouraging him almost precisely because he's succumbing to a natural impulse and we want this natural impulse to be staunched.
Right.
But let me go back a bit to your utilitarianism. And in some way, life's a complicated trade-off. If I tell my kid, kids are old now, but I pretend I have a little kid, that I'm going to come home and play Legos with him. And as I'm walking home, there's somebody drowning, and I could save that person's life. Presumably, I should save the person's life, even if my kid's at home and disappointed daddy didn't come home to play Legos. You make these trade-offs. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll go to a conference where they give me a lot of money and not play with my kid because, money's good. And all that, but the trade-off heavily weighs or should heavily weigh the families. So here's a hypothetical: somebody has a kid. The kid, for like $50,000, the kid will get an operation to save her eyesight. She's going blind and needs to operate to save her eyesight. I think there was a movie like this. The father sends the money instead to Oxfam, where he says this will do more good. It may save the eyesight of four children instead of one. I think bad father and bad person. You don't get that? Now, if the $50,000 could save the world, save a million people, then I might say, wow, that's kind of, it's complicated. But but the kid gets should get much more weight.
I wouldn't say condemn the father because A, the behavior he's exhibiting is one, not one we need to discourage. It never happens. It almost never happens. So it's not this rampant problem. B, as if I'm seriously utilitarian, I shouldn't complain. But I do want to emphasize that I don't think we should condemn people for not being good utilitarians. I don't think we should waste our time condemning the people who aren't busy saving the eyesight of two kids rather than their kid. Because, again, that impulse is so strong. And Biden's is strong, too, I grant. I'm just saying that the benefits in Biden's case of the normative punishment are so strong as to outweigh that, in my view. So I think in the moral animal, I talked a fair amount about morality, but the argument was that, and the book was largely about human nature, of course, but the argument was that, where human nature figures in to moral considerations very importantly is in helping us understand how likely is it that we are going to be able to change behavior, even if it would be for the social good. There's all kinds of things that, the cost is just too high because of human nature. And I grant that. But the guy's president. He said he wouldn't. I just think right now in American history, if you give more Trumpists this thing to point to, every time we complain about Trump and the rule of law, you're not helping matters.
I also just see a difference in a case where Biden has a plausible case, and this in some way speaks to your issue, the message he's broadcasting, where it's not like, Hunter Biden robbed a bank, heading for prison, and Biden snapped his fingers and said he's getting out of here. In Biden's statement about the motivation of Bernie, he said, "This is my son has been hounded, and this is unjust." And presumably, that's the argument for pardoning in general, where presidents are ideally supposed to apply their pardon power to the victims of unjust laws, like people in prison for smoking pot or something, or for their sexual orientation. That's the good use of it, and you could do it for sort of miscarriages of justice. And I think Joe Biden honestly believes, and I think he's probably right, that his son is being treated unjustly, and there's that case. And then from that point of view, arguing against unjust prosecutions isn't itself, in general, an immoral thing.
Well, no, but the perception of a parent that their children are being treated unfairly is itself such a profound cognitive bias that why should we pay attention to his perception? I mean, I don't think we should honor that perception. I don't think we should honor cognitive biases by and large.
It's true, but it's not like my son's this great kid. There's no way they should put him in prison. They don't understand how great he is. This is one where plausibly a third party like me could say, I think Joe Biden has a point. I think Hunter Biden shouldn't be going to prison for these things. Now, you could then say, there's so many other cases of people being unjustly sent to prison. Why doesn't Joe Biden focus on those rather than his son? And plainly, there's bias here.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah.
So, in summary, I'm right and you're wrong. Do you have anything to add to that?
I would argue against the I'm wrong part. But I appreciate
it. See, that's a cognitive bias. Yeah. I have to send some normative punishment your way for exhibiting that cognitive bias.
I also think a month from now we're not going to be talking about this.
I'll tell you, in Trump land, they're going to be talking about this for a long time. You will see references to it. You and I won't be bringing it up.
I mean, there's other arguments I've seen. So against when I put up my Substack, roughly defending Joe Biden, a lot of people said, and my comments said, the only reason why Joe Biden wants to pardon his son is because his son will be used as leverage against them because there's this criminal gang that he's part of and so on. And it's self-interest, not love for his son is motivating Joe Biden. I think that's ridiculous. What I think an argument in favor of Joe Biden, this is an I'm right and you're wrong kind of thing, is that if without the pardon, the Trumpists would have gone after Hunter, would have just squeezed him and done whatever they wanted to him. Plainly,
Donald Trump. Would have prosecuted him again or what?
Prosecuted him for different things. That's
the best argument I've heard. It's pretty conjectural. It wouldn't shock me if it weren't possible for Biden to craft a pardon that insulated him from that all that without insulating him from this.
So what somebody suggested in the New York Times was he shouldn't have pardoned him for the particular crimes of the gun and thing, but he should have given a blanket pardon. You can't go after him for anything else. To be fair, I've heard this on Twitter. I'm not sure that this is true. You would know if this is true, but somebody said, apparently Hunter Biden owes somebody a lot of money because he rented his house for like $300,000 or something for a long period.
Yeah.
And in payment gave him a painting.
Hunter gave him a painting. A Hunter painting?
That Hunter painted. Because some of my Hunter paintings would sell for a lot of money.
Well, if it was an authentic Hunter. But I'd love to have an authentic Hunter.
So anyway, what do you think of the idea? I think I know what you think of the idea, but which is that during his time left in office, Joe Biden should pardon just about all of the people that Donald Trump has said he's going to go after. I forget.
He should pardon all journalists. You know what? What's interesting? Here's a candidate. Vindman, you know this guy Vindman, this Ukrainian American who's in a lieutenant colonel, a colonel in the military, and he was, you know, influential in encouraging he played a big role in one of the Trump impeachments, I think he testified.
Yep. He was in Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Was he in Curb Your
Enthusiasm? Playing himself as a
really?
Episode. Yeah.
He gets around.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm not a big fan of his, but he said something that led Elon Musk to say recently on social media, he should be behind bars. And look, Musk is about to be in a position where he could maybe make that happen. So Trump should pardon Vindman, even though, again, I'm not a huge Vindman fan.
Yeah, Biden should, yeah.
I mean, Biden, yes. Yeah. Speaking of Musk, just quickly.
Speaking of Musk.
Other news updates. So Musk filed a lawsuit this week trying to stop OpenAI from becoming a private company. You know, it started off as a nonprofit. Musk donated most of the original money. And then they became kind of a quasi-nonprofit by creating a subsidiary, which is what we think of now as OpenAI, but it's still ultimately governed by the board of the nonprofit. That's the board where there was the attempted coup that Sam Altman ultimately thwarted and returned to the board. But anyway, now in Altman's last round of investment, he pulled in $6 billion, but he had to pledge to the investors, who by the way, include Jared Kushner's brother. And you may have noticed OpenAI is setting up a big office in New York. They're inhabiting a whole building. Coincidentally, it's a building owned by Jared Kushner's brother. Nothing like illegal about that, but it does make you wonder, like, the reason I think OpenAI started having more trouble with this fundraising round because of various shit that happened. You know, one thing you do when that's the case is you do these implicit quid pro quos sometimes. Mm-hmm. But anyway, this is interesting because of the politics I will get to shortly about the fact that, you know, of course, Musk hates Altman and may use his leverage in the Trump administration to hurt OpenAI. But anyway, this particular issue is that Altman promised to the investors that if the company doesn't become a truly not privately, you know, publicly owned, a fully for-profit company. In other words, just do a divorce mm-hmm. with the nonprofit. If they haven't done that in 2 years, these investors get some kind of like, they get their money back or something. I don't know what the deal is, but Altman has created a very strong incentive to pull this off. And it's actually very complicated because any assets, you cannot take assets from a nonprofit. Right now, all of the OpenAI assets, as I understand it, are probably nonprofit. You cannot take them without compensating OpenAI. I run a nonprofit. And I am going to have to, you know, the book I'm writing on AI, little bits of it will have appeared in the newsletter. I'm going to have to pay my nonprofit part of my book proceeds, because once you've put it in the newsletter, it is the property of the Non-Zero Foundation.
Oh.
Yeah, great, huh? Anyway.
Here I am in Mexico, but I haven't worried about your problems.
Right. If you feel those heartstrings tug, you can send some money to me. So, anyway, there is now the specter of Musk. Leave aside the merits of the lawsuit, and it may have some, because in theory, OpenAI should give a shitload of money or equity to this nonprofit. Although, since Altman is on the board of the nonprofit and appointed many of the members, they may not be as demanding as actually they would be if they were doing their duty.
So put aside the legal minutiae, which mm-hmm. you know about, and all the technicalities, and all the financial technologies. Isn't Musk morally right? I mean, it seems to me that if I donate, give an enormous amount of money to your nonprofit, and then years go by, and all of a sudden you want to transform into something which will get you a tremendous amount of money, and I get nothing back, I feel kind of conned.
Well, no, he has no claim of personal harm, because once you donate money to a nonprofit, you got the tax deduction, and that's it. I guess he could claim they got, if he claims that Sam Altman like knew at the time there were false pretenses, and who knows. I suppose he can make that kind of argument, but in a weird way, a more clearly damaged party is the U.S. government and their taxpayers, because it was an implicit subsidy to OpenAI, the tax deduction, and now they're converting, you know, the assets generated partly with the help of an implicit subsidy into this massively valuable corporation.
It seems. Clever in not a very good way, which is you set up a nonprofit to do something. You people give you money. The U.S. government gives you a tax credit. And then once you get it off the ground, you start transforming into profit, start bringing in the money.
Yeah, there was a good podcast discussion on 80,000, the 80,000 Hours podcast about how complicated this is and how much stuff the nonprofit is owed. Although, again, the nonprofit board is like Sam Altman and his friends, basically. So keep an eye on it. Anyway, just quickly, two things. Will Musk use his power within the administration so long as it persists to damage OpenAI? If he does, it'll probably damage Google and Anthropic, because in general, regulations, those are the three big companies that have big proprietary large language models. Musk has an open source model, so he's going to be pulling for open source anyway, which many people think is dangerous and shouldn't be allowed at the level of very powerful models. And then that aside, the fact that he'd be using his leverage for open source to begin with to keep that legal, which Meta is also doing, he has the personal vendetta or whatever you want to call it. So stay tuned.
Yeah, nobody here is principled, and Musk and Trump and that whole administration will do whatever they can to further their own interests, their political mm-hmm. interests, their financial interests. So, you know, if Musk could, he will.
Yeah. Although, Paul, if you see, since Musk was the main donor, if you see OpenAI as his offspring, wouldn't you condemn him for like not being a good father? Or maybe it works the other way around. I'm trying to get into like Paul morality here. How am I doing?
My morality is a natural morality.
It is. I agree with that.
You know,
and Trump is a natural man. There's a lot of natural things going on.
Okay. So we should segue smoothly.
We should go into overtime probably.
Yes.
Which we're going to talk about a lot in overtime, right? Oh
we're
man, we
talk
have
about,
so much.
Silo.
We've been watching Silo. Oh, there's news on the lab leak front. I mean, that won't take. Well, Republican subcommittee report. I mean, Republican controlled subcommittee report saying lab leak happened basically. And I actually just taped a podcast with a guy who supports the lab leak hypothesis, Yuri Dagan, and that'll air pretty soon. I'll talk a little
kind
about
of
that.
Cut to the chase. What probability would you give that lab leak is right?
That's an overtime. They're not going to get that for free, Paul.
Not going to get the numbers.
I'm within the range that you could call agnostic. But yeah, I'm usually on one side of 50% of the other, and I'll give you my update, as they say in Bayesian land. Blue Sky Twitter.
Mm.
What's the latest? Is Blue Sky really going to be happening? We'll tell people what they should do with it.
Yeah.
You wanted to talk another family related thing. You did a piece. Now been a little while since you did it in your newsletter about do parents have really much influence over their kids? For that matter, do like spouses, do people around you have much influence on your developing kids?
That could go on for a while. We may have a whole episode on that, you and I. On a slow news day.
But we can touch on it. And then the final bit of paywall bait. Do you have more paywall bait?
No, I think that's it.
Call it paywall bait.
A few things on the TV series, Day of the Jackal.
Day of the Jackal. Anyway, so Overtime is available to people who are paid subscribers either to the Small Potatoes newsletter or the Non-Zero newsletter. And we're going to set up this this discount thing soon. I mean, we can do it this time. If you think you have the wherewithal to put a link in your, you don't have a post corresponding to this podcast, or do you?
No, I don't.
You'd have to do that. It's not hard. And then some people would actually do the podcast through your edifice, through your infrastructure. Anyway, look, final bit of paywall bait. And this one's big. I've used this once. I think it's the last time I'll use it because I'm going to go public with these eyeglasses at some point. But apparently I'm switching from contact lenses to eyeglasses because contacts, it's like if I get contacts at correct for distance, then, close-up is an issue and so on. Whereas with progressive lenses, with glasses, it's whatever. Anyway, I got these glasses that are just mind-blowing. These are frames I've owned for, I think, 4 decades, and I had new lenses put in them. And you would like to see them right now, Paul? Yeah. Well, you can't because we're not in overtime. You don't see these for free. Although you will, within a week or so, I think. But
is there any follow-up on that sort of sexual/aggressive interaction you had when you went to the eyeglasses place?
I have some thoughts. That was a story told in overtime. I mean, if people want to hear about my sexually suggestive encounters at opticians, and who doesn't, overtime is the only place that happens, right?
Man, I can't wait.
Also, I want to get your reaction because you've already put thumbs down on my book jacket. Thanks, Paul. Actually, I haven't seen the final version, but you don't like the idea. Fine. So you'll get to opine on the glasses. And I'll tell you what, if you just warn me off of them with all of your energy, say, Bob, don't. Maybe it'll never be seen again. Who knows?
I had a Thanksgiving in Boston, and one of my relatives, the husband of one of my cousins, had these glasses that were white. They were very hipster. They were like just, and they just a shocking big jump of color. And I liked them a lot. Are yours similarly hipster like?
I was gonna say, if you didn't like them, you may have just insulted my glasses, but we don't know, do we? That's the mystery of overtime.
Okay.
So we encourage people to become members at Non-Zero. It's a worthy cause. Only yesterday was Giving Tuesday.
Small potatoes.
Small potatoes. Well, you encourage that. We both encourage Non-Zero. As I understand it, we both encourage the Non-Zero thing, and then you encourage the small potatoes thing?
I think the non-zero thing is for people who love humanity and want to maximize overall happiness. And small potatoes is for people who love those who are closer.
For people who want everyone to let their criminal sons out of prison.
That's right.
Okay. So make your choice,
Hunter Biden,
folks.
Or not Hunter Biden, really.
That's all the guidance I'll give you. It's up to you. Whatever you decide is fine. All right. So